The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by Lady Cat of the Woodland Realm, whose words are, "The fox is the difference between being wise and being crafty."
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into chapter 14, Catelyn 2?
3.
3. Catelyn 3, off to a great start of A Game of Thrones. And we are talking about Jaehaerys, the first in our Maester study today, and that is a huge part of today's show. Actually, we didn't think it was going to be that big, but wow, I've been sitting here working on it for some time.
This may be a longer show.
Just
FYI, I'm thinking we may be 2 hours plus.
Right, and I think we've been sitting here for 2 hours, like working on some of the details.
Because I have the deepest of rabbit holes to go down. The deepest rabbit hole we've ever gone down.
Good. Yeah. I can't wait. I really can't wait.
I'm waiting for one of our patrons to be like, "I want a rabbit hole as my sigil."
Wow. That'd be great. That would be great.
What we need.
Okay. I always like to mention up in the front of the show that we have our number if you want to give the show a call, 614-547-2350. Leave us a voicemail. Leave us a question. We will play those on the show if we get those. We've been getting a lot of Ravens. And we really appreciate this. This is huge. Makes Follow-Up Friday just a whole bunch of fun. So if you have thoughts on today's episode or just theories in general, like as Sir Matt just said, we have a rabbit hole to go down later. That you can send your ravens to btkcast@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Small council, my friend. What do we have?
Man, a lot. Just on our quick updates on life. Just still craziness. Just feel like life's yeah. just flying around right now all over the place. Ezra and I are both. I'm going on vacation this week. He's going on vacation the following week. So
right.
I feel like we're recording every day. So you guys aren't going to miss anything.
No.
Miss anything on that. The only thing we may do is this for this week's Follow-Up Friday. We may just do a theory. And then we can do Follow-Up Friday next week,
which would give us double the Ravens and would be a nice
be a longer one, because last week we didn't really have that many.
And
that just kind of depends on what we get. So
yeah, and we also are pretty good about we have a couple that we have saved up just because they're really deep and they kind of deserve their own
attention. We usually do one at the end of this show too. So
right, exactly.
We got a lot to dive into. So all right, Sir Ezra, some show news. This has kind of been mentioned a little bit, but I don't think I've mentioned it here. So potential spoilers here for season 8 of Game of Thrones.
Spoilers, you've been warned.
You've been warned. This next segment is dark and full of spoilers. But there has been some pictures taken, by people who kind of hang out around the sets as Game of Thrones filmed. I just kind of rambling through this, some news, and I came across this and I kind of forgot to mention it, is that there are pictures of the King's Landing set.
Okay.
And part of them, so you can see them. There's a lot of green screen and stuff, obviously, but you can still see kind of like the standing set. And a lot of them seem to have a lot of fire burns at the top.
Wow.
So that would imply dragons.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's not, that seems
unexpected.
Right. Yeah. That seems like something that could totally happen. So, we have no clue.
Is it Daenerys? Is it the Night King?
Yeah. Yeah. it'll be interesting as we get going here.
Does Daenerys take the throne and then the Night King is attacking?
Yeah. There's so many different possibilities. Can't wait for us to get kind of like a. They're still filming. They're still.
Yeah, I think they're like mostly done. They're probably just filming some stuff. They have. I've also seen stuff where they've been talking about how they've been like just issuing, like they've filmed so many different endings because they don't want it spoiled and all this stuff. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So okay. Other than that, there's not really a lot going on. There's nothing like big or anything. So
gotcha. Okay. Well, you know, that's good. We'll keep you guys posted on everything that's happening there. And, you know, as we get like trailers and updates and things like that, that small council could turn into, you know, something a little bigger as we get closer to the show. Anything on Not a Blog? Really nothing there?
No, nothing going on. Okay. Unfortunately, it seems like Winnegar's old, like, childhood, like, longtime friends
that was
passed away.
Sad,
or something.
Right?
Something I think he had just kind of grown up with in, like, the novelist community, seems like. And then Night Songs or one of his other projects was recently published. So.
Oh, cool. Nice.
So get back to Game of Thrones.
Yep. All right. Okay, so let's head over to the Maester's Study. And as I said at the top of the show here, we're going to go over Jaehaerys, his reign, first of his name. But to do that, I kind of said I would do this a couple weeks ago to kind of comb back through things to really help the understanding here. And the reason I'm going to do this on the podcast is because I did it for myself and it kind of helps a little bit. So, you know, again, we comb back over these things. Aegon the Conqueror, right? He conquered Westeros for us. Mm-hmm. Six of the Seven Kingdoms. We've talked about that. Dorne being the holdout. And, you know, and then the throne was passed to Aenys. We've talked about his rule and Maegor and what happened there. Now, at the end of Maegor the Cruel's reign, he really is left with no children, right? I mean, we've covered that. Last week, we did a whole huge Black Council on that three-part episode. Each of those are an hour on patreon.com/bendtheknee. So if you want to check that out, there's a whole lot there about that. And it's called, you know, it's the Sons of the Dragon series.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so Maegor has no children, and he has this mysterious death right at the end. And actually, right before that, he's having this great council where Aenys' children... his wife and his remaining children are a lot of different things happen with each of them. I'm going to kind of go over what happened to each of his children, just once again very briefly, and they come back. So you imagine Maegor has no offspring. His older brother Aenys, you know, had a very fruitful, you know, marriage and things like that, and just sort of died early. And then Maegor did not treat his family very well, his nieces and nephews. You know, there was this whole struggle between how would the succession work. And I think the first couple, you know, kings here, Sir Matt, like we get into this is a big theme, is that who comes next? Mm-hmm. Who is next in line? That's the big question. So a lot of that kind of gets settled, air quote here, settled under Jaehaerys, but it gets unraveled by his grandson later on. So, which leads us into the Dance of Dragons. But let's stay right here with Aenys for a second and his children. So Rhaena Targaryen, who was once kind of betrothed to Maegar, and Aegon the Conqueror put an end to that. You know, this idea that...
You mean Maegor.
What did I say?
Rhaegar.
Yeah, Maegar. Yeah, not Rhaegar. Nope. once betrothed to Maegor the Cruel.
There we go.
Excuse me. So yeah, Rhaena Targaryen is the firstborn daughter to Aenys Targaryen and Alyssa Velaryon, right? And she actually has this dragon, Dreamfire, right? She has a couple twins. She is actually married to Aenys, you know, second child and firstborn son, Aegon Targaryen. And, you know, that upset, you know, the Septon, that upset, the, you know, Old Town is pissed. They're calling him, you know, they're telling Aenys this is ridiculous. You know, like, it was okay for Aegon the Conqueror, but it's not okay for Aenys, right?
Right.
Okay. So, anyways, those two have, you know, pretty good marriage, and they actually have twin girls. I think it's Arya and Rhaella. Mm-hmm. And you remember we talked about them being smuggled away,
right?
And Tyanna of the Tower finds them and all this kind of stuff, right? So, you know, and Rhaena ends up becoming one of Maegor's wives later on, because he had six.
Right.
Yep. He has six of them. Ends up becoming a wife later on. And so she's over there with her children, right? Now, Viserys is one of the other kids who Maegor kept close to him. Remember, he keeps him out late at night, trying to get Alyssa Valyrian to come back. It's not working, trying to get, you know, he's really trying to wrap up Aenys' family, I think is what he's trying to do. He's trying to keep them close. He has no heirs, so he actually names Viserys next in line. Mm-hmm. He names his nephew, you know, next in line, and I think he wanted to keep the rest of his family close at hand because he didn't want them to, you know, preemptively, I don't know what's the word to rise against him, right. and because usurp. That's what Aegon was
not
doing.
Really usurp, but yeah, I guess.
Yeah, kind of. But that's what Aegon was doing with Quicksilver, the battle, you know, beneath the God's Eye, or and you know that whole battle right. that they had, dragons fighting in the air. Hadn't seen anything like it since the time of Old Valyria. You know, so Viserys is killed, Aegon is killed, so Aenys' two sons gone. Right, so who's left? Who we're talking about today? Jaehaerys is next. Now, you might say Rhaena Targaryen, right? You could say she's still there. But really what it was is that Alyssa kind of said she had no more communication really with Rhaena Targaryen. She was older, grown up, was doing her own thing, and was on her own flight. And Alyssa Valyrian, you know, Aenys' wife, decides she has her younger children. And once they're old enough, they have three dragons, especially once Rhaena shows up to join them in Essos, and they come back, man, with three dragons, and they didn't even really need to go against Valyrian and right. and Maegor because he mysteriously dies.
Yeah.
So Jaehaerys comes back and he is crowned. You know, he's crowned king. Yeah. So he
chooses to wear his father's crown, Aenys' crown.
Right.
So back to the golden.
Yeah, crown. That's interesting. We should keep more track of that. You know, who's the kind of going back and forth between the different, you know, crowns and what have you? Because Maegor came back and chose the one with
Valyrian Steel
yeah. crown. Yeah,
Aegon's crown.
Yeah. So, Jaehaerys is the fourth born child of Aenys. He rises against his uncle, King Maegor the Cruel. He, along with his remaining siblings, Rhaena, Alyssa, Vaella dies as an infant, so doesn't really count there, but and his mother, Alyssa Valyrian, they win back the Iron Throne from Maegor with their dragons. So he then is later 2 years, actually I think it was a couple years into his reign, this is where we kind of start and talk about his reign, his mother, Alyssa Valyrian, right, is the, what do they call it, like the protectorate, regent, queen regent.
Yeah. Protector of the realm.
Right, yeah. So she's overseeing things while he's still, I think he had 2 years there to still kind of grow up and things. And then in 50 AC, so 50 years after the conquest, he marries his sister, Alysanne. Mm-hmm. So Alysanne Targaryen and Jaehaerys are married. And honestly, this is, you were kind of talking about how like Ger does this thing where it's like 50 years of just like peace.
Right.
It's just like, well, it was good. You know, we had all this craziness. So everything I just went over there, we go over in much more detail in the Black Council, and we went over it in detail in the last couple of chapters. There's a bunch of craziness going on there. And then now it's pretty straightforward under Jaehaerys. It's a pretty, you know, good reign. The only major things that happen in it is to kind of talk about the Great Council, and to talk about how the next line of succession would happen. I think a couple of the cool things we want to kind of mention are that like the there's a couple. I think he reigns for 55 years, and at 50 years of his reign, let's see. So that would have been around 100 AC. There's this like great tournament.
Yeah, 98 AC, a great tourney was held.
Yeah, so to kind of celebrate. You know that. Well, yeah, because of the 2 years where he wasn't.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, and there's like 100 lances or something. How many?
In 98 insane. AC, a great tourney was held in King's Landing to celebrate Queen Jaehaerys' 50th year on the Iron Throne. All of Jaehaerys' living children, grandchildren, and great children were present in the final tilt. Sir Ryam Redwine and Sir Clement Crabb broke 30 lances against each other before King Jaehaerys' proclamation that he just crowns them co-champions.
Yeah, right.
And it was often called the finest display of jousting in Westerosi history.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like a good omen. It was a good sign that they just kept going. And this is great. This is good. It was, you know, yeah. So it was just a good time. It was a good reign. things with the faith were also good. Mm-hmm. He kind of reconciled, you know, things with the faith and was able to, I mean, even though Magor really is the one who came back and put an end to the warrior sons and the faith militant, mm-hmm. Jairus just kind of keeps in good relations with them because they don't stop with the incestuous marriage. You know, that still happens yeah. with his children and his grandchildren. Mm-hmm. So we can touch on that a little bit more as we go on. Now, very interesting when we talk about Jairus, his reign, you have to talk a lot about Alysanne, his wife, his mm-hmm. sister wife. She's actually, they say, you know, they call Jairus the old king because he lived so long and he reigned for so long. And his wife was there with him for most of it. I think they have like a long, super good, they were married for 46 years. They had two estrangements, so two kind of separations where they just, she was apart from him for 2 years here or a year there. And if you guys who are listening can figure out or know more about the first estrangement, I didn't find anything on the first estrangement and how they were first separated. But the second one's pretty significant, which we'll get to. So now some of her, she basically worked to get the, what do you call it, right of the first night, right? So the lords in the land who would have like take that mm-hmm. that bedding ceremony, you know, right, they would go in and they would
right,
whatever.
Yeah.
You know, she kind of did away with that, you know, and was really, she's really kind of a progressive.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
No, absolutely, yeah.
I mean, she was all about like, you know, like her role, I think, was significant. He really relied on her and took counsel from her. She helps to kind of secure the new gift for the Night's Watch, which was mm-hmm. a big deal. Let me see what I got here. So at the wall, Queen Alysanne helped the Night's Watch rebuild the Night Fort, which they named Deep Lake. Queen's Gate, formerly known as Snow Gate at the wall, is named in honor of Queen Alysanne. She helped the Night's Watch secure the new gift. Alysanne also helped convince her brother husband to outlaw the right of the first night, which we just talked about. I kind of noted in here a couple, like her dragon is Silverwing. So again, that whole coming back against Magor the Cruel, she had Silverwing. Her brother had, how do you say that dragon's name? Vermithor?
Yeah, Vermithor.
Yeah, we'll go with Vermithor. I believe is how it's said. So they had, that was, I just kind of wanted to note the dragons, but mm-hmm. the estrangement, I think in 92 AC, something kind of significant happens. And so we have to kind of talk about Jairus' children to talk about that estrangement. Right. So let's just pause for a second there and keep that. What was their second separation? Because it is very significant, and talk about their children in this line of succession.
Right.
Okay. So Jairus Targaryen, I think he had like 13 children and only 9 of them lived to be adults is what it said.
Yeah.
And he has some insane amount. He has numerous grandchildren too. Now, what's interesting is he actually outlives a lot of his children.
He does. Yeah.
That's what causes the issue.
He lives like well, he was well into like almost his 60s or well, his late 50s, I think.
Maybe more because he reigns for 50.
Oh, yeah,
5
yeah.
years plus.
And he's like 14. 14? When he takes over. Yeah. So.
Yeah,
he's like 65 when he dies.
Yeah, something like, yeah. Yeah, 69, 70, something like that, yeah. So anyways, his children, let's go over who his children. I looked this up on the wiki, actually. It's in the World of Ice and Fire.
He's 69 years old.
69 years old when he dies, yeah. So his children, Aegon Targaryen, he had an Aegon, but it looks like he died. I didn't even get that in the World of Ice and Fire, but it said it on the wiki, so I thought I would include it. They definitely don't say it, though, in A World of Ice and Fire, as far as I could tell. The first one that's mentioned in A World of Ice and Fire is Aemon Targaryen, second-born son of King Jairus, Queen Alysanne. He married Lady Jocelyn Baratheon, and they had a daughter named Rhaenys Targaryen. So this is going to be a granddaughter, and she's very significant. We'll talk about her. She's mm-hmm. basically the granddaughter that gets passed over, in a sense, you know, the queen who never was. Next, after Aemon, you have Alysa Targaryen. She actually marries her younger brother, Baelon Targaryen. So let's just go through them again. Aemon Targaryen, Alysa Targaryen, Baelon Targaryen, and then Daella Targaryen and Aerys Targaryen. So those are all of his kids. The ones that are significant that we kind of need to focus on a little bit are Aemon Targaryen first, his firstborn son. Well, it's his secondborn son, but his eldest son, okay? Mm-hmm. And he dies in 92 AC. And so that first estrangement that I wanted to kind of put on hold there, you know, where Jaehaerys sort of gets upset with his wife, you know, Alyssa Valerian, basically, did I have that right? Jaehaerys marries, why do I have Valerian on there?
I don't know.
Yeah, I might want to change that. But anyways, he gets upset with her because she basically says that, like, you know, after Aemon Targaryen dies in 92. So this is the heir apparent. He is the Prince of Dragonstone, right? Right. His second born son.
And when he dies, by the way, he's born in between 52 AC and 61 AC, mm-hmm. and then dies in 92 AC. So he's like, 40?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, 30, 40 years old.
Like, he's ready to go, been prepping. Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, to be next in line. And he's actually fighting against, like, I think
a Mirish pirate.
Right.
And that's because we can get back to that when they talk about some of the achievements of Jaehaerys, is he actually almost kind of like, he like dispatches ships to go kind of.
Yeah, he does. Explore. Right, right.
That stuff.
Yeah. Well, and so anyways, so when he dies, this big question comes up, like, do we go to the next brother, you know, or do we go to, you know, Aemon Targaryen didn't have a son. So, you know, I think it's normally like if the eldest, you know, son, if he passes, you would go, the crown would go to his son. Mm-hmm. You know, the son, normally you would say the son of the first son, right? Mm-hmm. But that he doesn't have one. He has a daughter named Rhaenys Targaryen. So what do you do? And, you know, this is where he makes a decision and he says it's going to go to Baelon Targaryen, his next eldest son. And his wife is not happy with that.
Yeah.
And she basically leaves him for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And, but he sticks to it. He says that's what he wants to do. They're estranged. They're actually reconciled by, like, his daughter, who's mm-hmm. a Septa.
Yeah.
And that's kind of cool. They truly loved one another. And, like, I think it was a really good marriage, but, like, she seems just super smart and super, like, independent, almost like feminist type of, you know, Targaryen, you know what I'm saying? And, which is neat. So now another problem happens though. Okay. So again, this king is old. He is outliving his children.
Yeah.
Baelon Targaryen next up, right? He's on deck. He's next up. He is also tragically, you know, not killed, but he dies during a hunting trip. Mm-hmm. He has this illness.
Yeah, 101 AC.
Yeah, 101 AC. And that's a number that should stick out to people who have read A World of Ice and Fire. 101 AC is sort of this great council to decide what to do next. Because he's basically out of sons at that point. He has, you know, he has a younger son who died at infancy. Aaron Targaryen, he's got Daella Targaryen, you know, who
Princess Daella, Princess Alyssa, Princess right. Viserra.
Yeah, it's just he doesn't. So
and then he's got some that he and he has two more that were like given to the faith.
Right, a lot of them were given to the faith. Yeah,
because he
repaired that relationship.
Repaired the relationship. Yeah.
Yep. Good call. Yep.
And his best friend is a Septon Barth.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's huge. We need to talk about that for sure. So just looking at this great council, right? They decide then to go back. The question is now: let's go back to, you know, the Aemon, his second son, you know, his daughter Rhaenys Targaryen, and he basically says again, I don't think we should go. I think it should be a male. It should be a male heir. Basically, flat out saying it should not be a female. Mm-hmm. That the male should go over. And so he kind of lays down this, he sets this precedent and says, who's the next eldest grandchild that is of male and goes with him? And that's Viserys, which is actually Baelon and Alyssa's son. So their eldest son. So it's a lot. It's crazy. And it's like, I'm also going to share this doc so you can kind of see it. And if you can go look up like the Targaryen tree, I think it makes a lot more sense too, just to kind of look at it. But I was trying to think of a way to talk about this, you know, succession, and it's just really hard to kind of do. So anyways, you know, it's set up that we're going to go with the eldest grandson that Jaehaerys has, and that's Viserys. So that gets us into that. Now, that'll be next week. We'll be talking about him. And again, same issue happens next week with Viserys and his daughter, you know, because he only has a daughter with his first wife. So, okay, let's go back into some of the major accomplishments. Matt, Sir Matt has some things pulled up here on the wiki for us. And
So right here, with Barth's aid and advice, King Jaehaerys did more to reform the realm than any other king who lived before or after. With his grandsire, King Aegon, had left the laws of the Seven Kingdoms to local traditions and custom, Jaehaerys created the first unified code, so that from the north to the Dornish marches, the realm shared a single rule of law. Great works to improve King's Landing were also implemented, drains and sewers and wells, especially that Barth believed that fresh water and flushing away of waste were important to a city's health. Furthermore, the conciliator, that's kind of what they call him, Jaehaerys the conciliator,
yep,
began the construction of the great network of roads that would one day join King's Landing to the Reach, the Stormlands, the Westerlands, Riverlands, and even the North. So
all
basically
the North.
The King's Road.
Yep.
It runs all the way to Castle Black.
Yep. Yeah, that's a pretty big deal. So, like, he's establishing laws. He's bringing unity. He's like, one of the things that when they talk about that road is, like, it was very difficult to traverse to get into these different kingdoms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Building that road, an army can quickly, if need be, if one of the kingdoms is having an uprising or whatever, it took longer to get to the different places in the Seven Kingdoms. So that roadway, well, and also trade, you know,
transportation, change.
Yeah. Everything. It's huge.
I mean, just go look at the United States history and look at what happened once the Transcontinental Railroad got in place.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Man. You know, or like...
Yeah. So another thing that Septon Barth, right, you know, that was his counselor. Didn't he name him Hand of the King?
Yeah.
Yeah, he named him Hand of the King. I think you just mentioned that. And the Faith, the High Septon in Old Town, they used to discipline their own, you know, Septas and Septons, right? And I think that was kind of not sitting well with the realm.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things that they kind of, like, he came up with this agreement. You know, he pledged to protect them and, you know, kind of got them to allow outside, you know, judgment when needed. You know what I mean? So it was basically like having another set of eyes on the Faith to sort of make sure that they're disciplining their people the right way.
Yes.
And they're not taking advantage of the laws and the Faith itself and their position. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like a check.
Yeah, he dispensed Septon Barth.
Yep.
To go investigate this. Go investigate this situation. It says basically what you just said. In this way, the great schism between the crown and the Faith was forever healed.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is awesome. I mean, he's known for, I mean, this solid reign, and then, you know, setting this precedent, right, about the line of succession, healing things with the Faith. So it's not just like Maegor coming back and like killing people and burning, you know, things, the warrior sons to the ground or whatever. It's like a true healing, I guess, you know? So, I'm trying to think of other major accomplishments that he had there. We already mentioned the ones about, his wife and her work with the Night's Watch, which was significant.
Right.
And that people say, too, that her work there, that kind of peeved, I guess, like the Starks.
Yeah.
Because they had to give up more of their territory and stuff like that and things. And, like, they did it. But that when you get to this great council, they kind of, like, Lord Stark actually, I think it just kind of worked against maybe her forwarding the idea of having a female sit the Iron Throne.
Yeah.
Because they kind of were, they not that it rubbed in the wrong way. It was a good thing to do. And like the Night's Watch is thankful for it. But I almost wonder if like the Night's Watch is slowly turning into what has that vibe or that carries that
where it is
connotation.
Now.
That, yeah, exactly. The way it is now. So
where it's, you know, it's just people from the dungeons and stuff like that. I think it's getting to that point. I did think it was interesting when they're talking about the Great Council that they go have it at Harrenhal, and they said that like Harrenhal, which then quickly, because so many people come that it becomes the fourth largest city in the realm.
Right.
For that like one event.
Yeah, they actually built a small town out nearby it to kind of house everybody else. They said that was the only place where they could get that many people inside of like a great hall.
Because
of how big it is. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, you often kind of forget Harrenhal. I mean, I think it's like the way it's when I first read the series, and I would think about it, it just seemed like it was burned, it was it was haunted, it was all these different things, and so...
When Harrenhal comes up a lot in these histories.
It does. And so it's a bigger deal than I think I've given it credit for, so... Yeah. Let me think here. Anything else here on Jaehaerys? I think what we'll do next week, too, is with Viserys, his grandson, who is going to come after him, you know, we can kind of comb back through. You'll hear names like, Rhaenys Targaryen, who is his granddaughter, the queen who never was. You'll hear her name brought up again because she marries someone else and has offspring, has children who later on it comes up again, like her children possibly being in line for the throne. So it gets very confusing. I'm just going to say, it's confusing. It's hard to follow.
Yeah, it is. And this is when they say there's like this, and then when you get into Viserys.
Viserys, yeah.
The next king.
And the Dance of Dragons.
The Dance of Dragons.
It's super.
One of the first lines in the World of Ice and Fire book is that there had never been as many Targaryens as there were at this point.
I know. And and they're all marrying each other, too, you know, which is the thing, too. So that becomes difficult. Mm-hmm. And at some points, they're marrying, like, their uncle. You know what I mean? Like, which is a big deal. So, anyways. All right. I think that's it for Jaehaerys.
Yeah.
Yeah. He lived for a long time. Good rule. Solid guy. We like him.
Mm-hmm.
5 out of 5 stars.
Yep. Probably best king ever.
Yeah.
So, well, there you go. You know.
So. Well, you know, that's why you and I were talking and speculating that, like, Jon's, if he is a Targaryen, that his name, you know, being named after Jaehaerys, mm-hmm. is a good thing. It's a favorable type of...
That's what a lot of people theorize his name will be in the books.
Yeah, I can totally see that.
A lot of people thought his name would be in the show, too.
Yeah. Right.
And then they said Aegon and it threw everyone off.
What? Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Okay. All right. Any comments from last week on the reread? I don't think that we had anybody.
Nope.
Okay. All right. So we're going to jump into the reread now. We are on to... Catelyn 3, you said?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Recap here.
So last week we were talking about...
Tyrion Lannister, right? Traveling north. He travels north with Benjen Stark, Jon Snow. He's kind of just impressed by that size of the north. They have this little campfire session. Tyrion gets jumped by a direwolf. It's pretty awesome. They talk about Grumpkins and Snarks and what have you. So they have a really, really candid discussion about life on the wall and what it's going to be like. And I think Jon really appreciated that from Tyrion. And there's sort of that friendship, that relationship is going to keep building as they as they go to the wall. And that is huge.
Yeah.
Not to be undervalued.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, this week we are on chapter 14, Catelyn 3. Catelyn's breakdown over Bran's fall ends when an attempt is made on Bran's life. Catelyn delays the assassin long enough for Bran's direwolf to arrive and kill the assassin. Catelyn is now convinced Bran did not fall, but was pushed.
Yeah.
So, all right, there's your summary. Now let's dive into the details.
Yep.
Broke this up into thirds. We have the first part, a master of horse. The second part, you shouldn't be here. And the third part, I must go myself.
Wow. Yeah.
So, now I guess we'll just break it down a little bit more and then kind of start picking it apart. So I guess the first part of this chapter is when you have Catelyn and she is distraught.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's distraught. She's with Bran. And
she kind of favors Bran though, right?
She does. Bran is her special boy, her favorite. Yeah,
right.
Because he's just really sweet. And a line right here. This is when Maester Luwin talks in. Maester Luwin comes in and he is, you know, he's saying, "Hey, we got
stuff to do.
We got stuff to do."
Right.
Let's see here. Maester Luwin set the lamp in a niche by the door and fiddled with its wick. "There are several appointments that require your immediate attention, my lady. Besides the steward, we need a captain of the guards to fill Jory's place, a new master of horse." Her eyes snapped around and found him. A master of horse? Her voice was a whip. The maester was shaken. "Yes, my lady. Hullin rode south with Lord Eddard, so..." "My son lies here, broken and dying, Luwin, and you wish to discuss a new master of horse? Do you think I care what happens in the stables? Do you think it matters to me one whit? I would gladly butcher every horse in Winterfell with my own hands if it would open Bran's eyes. Do you understand that? Do you?"
Wow. I tell you what, right there is some foreshadowing for Lady Stoneheart.
Mm-hmm.
If I've ever seen, I mean, like now that we know, and again, this being a reread, I'm going to go ahead and talk about it. The fierceness in which she was speaking with there, really, mm-hmm. like the, she tells you right there what she's willing to do for mm-hmm. her sons and daughters. Like mm-hmm. it's pretty radical.
And this is another, this is actually, this chapter is actually, I think, one of the better book to show. I think the show really does it well.
Yeah.
Although again, we talk about it all the time, is how the show influences us.
Yeah.
Is that in the book, it's all one scene. It's all one chapter.
Mm-hmm.
In the show, they have it split up. They have the part where after, we'll get to it when she mm-hmm. like finally goes to sleep and she hasn't been sleeping. And then right. they come back and they say, oh, it's time for me to go. That's like a different scene.
Right, it is.
That's
yeah.
not all one thing. They just split it up.
Right,
which
exactly.
makes kind of sense, I guess, you know. But when I was thinking about this, oh, I thought that was a different chapter. And it was
right,
not.
Right, and it's not. Yeah, yeah it so, happens right here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So so she's upset, but Rob decides, hey.
Right. Yeah, Rob comes in and he's like, I'll make the appointments. And the Maester Luwin's, okay, good.
Yeah,
okay.
And that, thankfully.
And that's kind of it. And so really then we kind of start to move into the second third of this chapter, mm-hmm. the more important thing. Leave us now, Rob said. Maester Luwin bowed and departed. Rob closed the door behind him and turned to her. He was wearing a sword. She saw, Mother, what are you doing? Catelyn had always thought Rob looked like her, like Bran and Rickon and Sansa. He had the Tully coloring, the auburn hair, the blue eyes. Yet now, for the first time, she saw something of Eddard Stark in his face, something as stern and hard as the North.
Mm-hmm.
What am I doing? She echoed. How can you ask that? What do you imagine I'm doing? I am taking care of your brother. I am taking care of Bran.
Yep.
And then her and Rob kind of not really get into it, but
right. He's trying to, you know, remind. He sees that she's distraught and remind her about, you know, Rickon.
Yeah, yeah. Right? And in the show, in the book, he says, you know, Rickon's three.
Yeah.
In the show, I believe he says he's six.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like a couple of years difference. Between the two, you know, Rob says, you didn't even come to the gate when Father and the girls went south. She said, I said my farewells from here. She had begged Ned not to go, not now, not for all that happened. Everything had changed now. Couldn't he see that?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that is, there's another show book difference.
Right, reversed, yeah.
Well, kind of. In the show, it's Catelyn saying, like, I don't, like, there's a scene where they're in bed together and then, like, comes in with the
mm-hmm.
the thing, the thing from her sister.
Right, letter, yeah.
Yeah, in the book, it's Ned that is like, hey, I don't want to go. And she's like, you have to. He's your king.
Right.
In the show, it's the other way around where she's like, I won't let that fat man take you.
Right, exactly.
And then we get the scene where Eddard Stark comes in to mm-hmm. see Bran. Mm-hmm. And that does not happen in the books.
Mm-hmm.
It could have, I guess, happened
sure,
here.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like where we kind
of
get those lines.
She says, yeah, I kind of said my farewells from here.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is actually the first time where she says, we get this sense that she begs him not to go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. I thought that was interesting. And then as you said, Rickon needs you, Rob said sharply. He's only three.
You know, I actually like in the show, he's talking about like he's following Rob around, mm-hmm. holding on to Rob, like doesn't know what to do, mm-hmm. needs his mother. You know, I thought that was something they did well in the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Took a liberty.
And then Rob's saying like, I can't do it by myself. Mm-hmm. I need you. Which I think is interesting again, because that's a big part of Rob and Rob's character is that he needs her to help him because he no longer has Eddard Stark because he's, you know, going down to King's Landing. And so he only has his mother to turn to.
Right. Can I say real quick, like this was going to be, even if Bran, nothing would happen there, this was going to be a huge moment for him anyways. He was going to be the Stark in Winterfell mm-hmm. and learn a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But now
he's still only like 14.
Exactly. So, yeah. Now it's like, what do you do? Mom's, mm-hmm. you know, all upset and I can't even. So,
yeah. And we'll come back to that line. I saw he was wearing a sword now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, interesting. So then this is when Rob opens the window and he can hear the howling of the wolves.
Mm-hmm.
And Catelyn is kind of freaking out and she hates the sound of the wolves. She's like, I can't stand it. Make them stop. Kill them all if you must. Just make them stop. And then we get here. This is when Rob goes to the window. Rob went to the window, but he reached for the shutters. Another sound was added to the mournful whoring of the direwolves. Dogs, he said, listening. All the dogs are barking. They've never done that before. Catelyn heard his breath catch in his throat. When she looked up, his face was pale in the lamplight. Fire, he whispered.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is when we see that there's a fire in the library.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it's one of those things.
And she says, thanks the gods, she whispers. Right. Not because gonna get Bran.
The yet. First thing she said was like, help me. Get him out of here. Let's go. Like, she has no idea what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
She's just in tune to any danger that might come to Bran. She wants to try and stop it and protect him. And he's just sort of like, no, he's explaining where it's at. Time to go. I think it's interesting too. Catelyn learns a lot. If you talk about character progression and things like that here with the direwolves and more about the Starks and who her children are, again, they're young and growing up, right? And she really sees, she is Lady Stark now.
Yeah.
She is, because like these direwolves are a big deal, and she sees that at the end of this chapter, which is huge. Mm-hmm. Huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, all right, here we go. The howling was gone, she realized, as she listened to the cacophone. I don't know that word. Anyway, the dire wolves had fallen silent because they know what's up.
Yeah.
Then we get Catelyn said a silent prayer of thanks to the seven faces of God as she went to the window. Across the bailey, long tongues of flame shot through the window of the library. She watched as the smoke rise. She watched the smoke rise into the sky and thought sadly of all the books the Starks had gathered over the centuries. Then she closed the shutters. When she turned away from the window, there was a man in the room with her. "You weren't supposed to be here," he muttered. "No one was supposed to be here."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was, again, you said they did it really well in the show. That it does almost exactly mirror book and show. It does a really good job. And that cacophony of noise that was going on out there.
That's the word.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, that is the distraction. Everyone's supposed to go there. And she even says later that that was supposed to draw her out.
Yeah.
But it is literally her distress and her, her sorrow, whatever it is. So she's lost in this moment, and she can't function like she should. Mm-hmm. She should have done what Rob did and got up and gone and had somebody else stay with Bran for just a moment. But she won't even sleep because she's afraid that he will die while she's sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And that just shows the state of mind that she's in. She's absolutely lost it here.
Right.
And that's why she sleeps for 4 days after this,
uh-huh,
because she's just completely, at a loss here. So this struggle is pretty graphic. She uses her hands to stop this Valyrian blade from cutting her own throat.
Mm-hmm.
So she's trying to stop him. And it has this struggle. It says too that she knew everyone who worked in the stables. She knew them by sight and probably by name. She did not know this man.
Mm-hmm.
He had light kind of blondish hair. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And he had these like pale eyes, I think.
If you want to search him, if you want to search this guy up, the best way to do it is you'll see him as like the assassin is kind of how he is described, or cat's paw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I just think it's like his description right here that we get in this chapter lends you sort of believe like he didn't look like a northern, mm-hmm, guy, whatever. He wasn't really of the Starkhold.
Mm-hmm.
And so they struggle, and it's Bran's direwolf that saves the day, and it sees the shadow sneak in there, and he is dead. Ripped half his throat out, right?
Oh, yeah.
Gone, mm-hmm, or done. She's actually able to push the blade away from her neck as he tries to slit her throat because she's screaming for help.
Yeah.
And I actually think she got that cry of help out or something.
Too. Well, especially because the window's open.
Right. And I also think this, too. I think that I think Bran's direwolves are smart, obviously.
Yeah.
And I think they saw someone who should not have been entering the tower enter the tower.
Well, there's also that. I think there's like a connection.
That too. I'm just saying like there's a whole piece there to it. The connection for sure is what it is. But,
because remember, like Rob and those people come like bursting back in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they knew, okay, let's run back to check on Bran. But yeah, here we go. Catelyn saw the shadow slip through the open door behind him. There was a low rumble, less than a snarl, the merest whisper of a threat, but he must have heard something because he started to turn just as the wolf made its leap. They went down together, half sprawled over Catelyn where she'd fallen. The wolf had hung him under the jaw. The man's shriek lasted less than a second before the beast wrenched back its head, taking out half of his throat. His blood felt like a warm rain as it sprayed across her face. The wolf was looking at her. Its jaws were red and wet, with its eyes glowed golden in the dark room. It was Bran's wolf, she realized. Of course it was. Thank you, Catelyn whispered, her voice faint and tiny. She lifted her hand, trembling. The wolf padded closer, sniffed at her fingers, then licked at the blood with a wet, rough tongue. When it had cleaned all the blood off her hand, it had turned away silently and jumped on Bran's bed and lay down beside him. Catelyn began to laugh hysterically.
Right, and that's kind of how they find her, right? She's just like losing. I mean, you can imagine, no food, no sleep. She's just like, wow. I mean, in all this time, she's been, you know, begging for them to shut the dog up, and this dog knows that its presence alone, this connection or whatever, is going to strengthen. You know, it's just like the presence of, you know, like, if you're sick in the hospital or whatever, and having loved ones around you or whatever can kind of strengthen you in a way we don't really understand. Having his mother there is one thing too, but his connection to this dog and his other family is very important.
Well, this is the first time we see actually just how useful the wolves are.
Yeah.
Because we know that they'd been there and stuff like that, but this is the first connection we see. And spoiler alert for those people who, you know, don't know what chapter's coming up next.
Yeah.
Is the first Sansa chapter, and I think that's where it happens, where they're on the King's Road.
Yep.
And Eddard Stark kills Lady.
Yeah.
And so now you see just how useful these are.
Right. You see how important it is here, and so it makes that death later on more meaningful. Right. You're like, whoa, come on, no, this is that's bad. I mean, look what they do for look what just happened with Bran. Like, we have to keep these dogs close to us. We don't want to see that happening. You know, and Catelyn was just earlier saying, kill the dog. Mm-hmm. You know, kill the dire wolf. And that's, you know, clearly not what we want to do. She learned so much here that later on in the next book, I think she actually encourages Rob, you know, to keep his dire wolf close. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very close. And that bad things happen when we keep them far away. Mm-hmm. You know, so very interesting. Okay, so I get, you know, after that little bit, Maester Luwin's kind of like dressing her wounds, talking about how deep the cut was,
almost to the bone.
Right. You know, gives her some medicine, and then she's out.
She passes out for like 4 days.
Yeah. And when she finally comes to, she realizes that her neglect has really put really
Rob
put Winterfell behind.
Yeah.
Yeah, like there are the appointments that need to be made. Things are like, gosh, if she would have continued in this state, like, it's just not good for any of them. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, in hindsight, she's looking at this thinking like, I mean, I don't know. Part of it was like, it's good that she was there in a sense, because what would have happened? Yeah. If, cause now they post guards, right? Mm-hmm. They post guards up at Bran's, room and things. If she hadn't have been there and she would have ran away and wasn't in this state, you know, could have been very different for Bran. But it's a Valyrian steel dagger. It's made of dragon bone. Its hilt is dragon bone. No reason it should have been in this guy's hand.
Right.
You know, that's clear. No one, he was paid, what was it, 30 pieces?
90 silver stags. And then next they kind of talk about who he was and where he potentially came from. They say, like, you know, with so many people coming and going when the king was there, must have been easy for him to slip in. They found where he had been sleeping in the stables for a while.
Right, yeah. But they believe he came with this company, right? He came with with the king when he came north, yeah.
Yeah, so I kind of want to finish, then I want to come back to the deep rabbit hole we're going to
That's
go
fine. Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that.
So and we're going to dive a little bit more into who this guy could be, who hired him, where, and the significance of the dagger and stuff like that. So so then basically what happens is we get the kind of the conversation, the follow-up conversation. He had 90 silver stags in a leather bag buried beneath the straw. It's good to know my son's life was not sold cheaply, Catelyn said bitterly. So again, you know, 90 silver stags is quite a bit of money. So it's got to be someone who has money, also because he has a Valyrian steel blade. Now, they don't know that yet. Or maybe they do, they just don't mention it until later.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, he came for Bran. He kept muttering how I wasn't supposed to be there. He set the library fire to thinking I would rush to put it out. Why would anyone want to kill Bran? God, he's only a helpless little boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I? Yeah. Exactly. One thing that kind of, and this is a completely random thought here, but when they're trying to inquire and figure out who this person is, let's see. They talk about Hodor.
Yeah.
Hodor saw him. The talk is that boy's been acting queer, but simple as he is. It's just like a quick little thing. He's been acting this way. He's been saying Hodor for years, but all of a sudden now he's acting different in a way that he wasn't before.
Right.
Why is that?
Could it be? There's a lot of things you can look at here. Could it be Bran from the future?
Mm-hmm.
Could potentially trying to come back and change this because maybe this would change everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Could it be Bran who is, because as the next Bran chapter we get to is where he's just having like a green dream.
Right.
And could it be that he's having green dreams now and he actually does already kind of warg into Hodor while he's, while he's in like a coma, you know, I guess.
Interesting. Wow. Never thought that. That's such a pretty good thought. Because we know he has the ability to do it. Right. And we know that when they're asleep, right, they slip into their direwolves.
Right.
Right. And
so he wouldn't know.
If he already has this, we're talking about, you know, not time travel, but whatever. If he already has this connection that's made Hodor say Hodor for all these years, and then he's slipping in and out of Hodor in his subconscious state or whatever, That's crazy because it's a quick line. I thought I'd point it out. You know,
you really have to pay attention. These really quick lines because I found one the other day in A Storm of Swords.
Yeah,
where I was like, oh my gosh, I think this line could be everything.
Yeah,
like, and it just happens.
Right.
So anyway, so then they're talking about Catelyn says, you know, yes, why would someone want to kill Bran?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the question. That's the question you need to have. Lady Stark, Sir Roderick said, with the guardsman had gone, did you get a chance to notice the dagger the killer used? He talks about the edge. He says the blade is Valyrian steel, the hilt dragon bone. A weapon like that has no business being in the hands of such as him. Someone gave it to him. Catelyn nodded thoughtfully. Rob closed the door. And this is where she tells.
Gets real serious here.
Gets real serious. My sister Lyza believes the Lannister murdered her husband. Lord Arryn, the Hand of the King, Catelyn told them. It comes to me that Jaime Lannister did not join the hunt the day Bran fell. He remained here in the castle. The room was deathly quiet. I do not think Bran fell from that tower. I think he was thrown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're shocked. I mean, she made them swear, you know, that they would not say a word about this. They each swear, and they really are kind of like, wait a second. Roger Cassell is a little bit sort of like, I don't think he's monstrous, but would he really do that? Would he go that far?
Right. And, you know, there is something interesting here. I'm looking at this. I think he was thrown. And this is kind of a different, or this line right here, I guess it is in the show as well. The boy had always been sure-handed in the past, Maester Luwin thought thoughtfully. He knew every stone in Winterfell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. They go back over that, and it's sort of like, yeah, there's another.
That was where we had a Bran chapter all about how he knows how to climb.
Right, which, initially.
You know, leads to the getting pushed.
And especially like the tower in which he fell from, it seems it should be abandoned. Like there should be no reason for me to be in there. But wait, somebody did not go out with. You know, one of the Lannisters was still here, and the queen was there, and all this stuff. You know, they start to think, right? So Rob is like, "I'll kill him myself." Like, he just jumps, there, pulls his sword out, right?
And she's Roderick is like, "Put that away," because she mentions like, "I see my son is wearing steel now."
Yeah.
And she says, "The old master at arms." I thought it was time, and she says, "Past time."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so now the decision is made, so she realizes that if this is true, right, okay, they've got this dagger, it just seems there's an assassination attempt made on her son. We don't want him to wake up, he knows something, which, this is all making sense, and we know, because of, you know, being the audience here. But she decides it's time to go to King's Landing, somebody has to go to King's Landing.
Right.
Rob wants to go.
It has to be a Stark in Winterfell.
That's right, he has to stay, and that's just not going to work, plus...
Rickon's too young.
And, right, exactly. Yeah. And they want to send like a smaller, like a decent amount mm-hmm. of people there themselves, but you know, Catelyn's sort of like, no, it needs to be me. I need to be the one.
I'll go myself.
I think one by, you know, with her going to, it also should show, you know, her husband that this is serious.
Yeah.
She took off and came down to kind of talk about this, right? They don't trust this to go into a raven. They don't trust, you know, I mean, here's the thing. I never thought about this really. How many people really know about this assassination attempt besides the people who were in this room? Mm-hmm. You know, like who does Catelyn tell later? You know, Ned, right? But then how far does it go? They really kept it close to the chest.
Yeah.
They didn't, and he didn't go bring it up to the court. He didn't say there's something going on. I want to investigate this further. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was because they believed he was in a den of lions and could be killed in King's Landing, just like Jon Arryn, because Jon Arryn had just been killed.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah.
Well, and you know, as readers, we had gotten the line about Jaime and Cersei look at each other when Tyrion is talking to them about the boy may live, and then Jaime's like, "Well, shoot him out. He should have mercy."
Yeah.
Right. So then it just, as readers, your first time reading it, Gurr, you know, likes to send people certain ways with their thoughts, even though he, you know, that's what you do as a good writer. And so right now, if you were reading this for the first time, you'd be thinking, oh, it was definitely Jaime Lannister.
Yeah.
Especially because they had already had the line again before, Jaime Lannister didn't go out the day of. Oh, you know, really building, really starting to build Jaime Lannister as the villain here.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yep.
So then, you know, we have the line that Catelyn, I must go myself. And she says, I will not be taking the King's Road, because she doesn't want to draw attention. So that is just kind of our run through of the chapter. But now I want to dive into a super deep rabbit hole here.
Okay. Let's do it.
All right. So a question I asked, and I kind of forgot. Me, you know, myself being a much heavier show person, so this, you know, and going read through the books here, is who actually does hire the cat's paw or the assassin? So in A Storm of Swords, this is from the wiki, Tyrion recalls a memory whilst he was at Winterfell in which he overheard Prince Joffrey Baratheon jesting with the Hound to send a dog to kill a wolf. He guesses that Joffrey hired the cat's paw among those joined at the king's party as they made their way north, and that he found the dagger amongst his father's weapons and had simply taken it. However, Tyrion is unable to figure out why Joffrey wanted Bran dead and attributes to his cruelty. Jaime, in a different chapter, later realizes that Joffrey sent the assassin in an attempt to impress his father. After overhearing a drunken Robert Baratheon say it would be kinder to put the crippled boy out of his misery. Now, in the show, so I'll click off that. In the show, we don't really know because we don't get that line. So in the show, we're kind of unsure actually as to who sent it.
Yeah.
Who sent the assassin? We know it's Littlefinger's blade. But who tried? I have this thread pulled.
Right. Okay.
Pulled up here, and it's just interesting. So, some of the things people are saying, Tyrion and Jaime both came to a belief that it was Joffrey. This guy is saying, I myself have always been dissatisfied with that explanation. And even if Tyrion and Jaime seem somewhat, dissatisfied by it, the murder attempt comes directly after Bran first begins the Green Dream Warg and Bloodraven contacts him for the first time. This person, I'm also curious about the dagger made of Lyrian steel with a dragonbone hilt. Why not just any old dagger? Joffrey didn't have to root around amongst his father's old weapons. He could have picked one up anywhere. Or why did the murderer why not tell the murderer to use his own? What's the point? So you have somebody else saying that it doesn't make sense that Joffrey would do it, because Joffrey also there's tried to once impress his father where he kills something and Robert Baratheon like just smacks him across the face. I'm gonna try and find that. So
yeah,
is it possible?
Oh boy,
it was Bloodraven.
Whoa,
you know. Perhaps warging into someone or something, just another thing was setting up. He sent the you know, you and I, you and I, and I think some of our listeners, as I can tell, as they've been messaging us, are kind of starting to see, kind of question some of the same things we are, in that how did those wolves get beyond the wall?
Yeah. You're right. That's a good point. Yeah, it kind of sets in motion a lot of different things. They're sent to aid the Starks, I think, in a way. Yeah. Even though there's bad omens in the fact that the mother was killed with the, you know, the antler of the stag. But, you know, one thing, so I have pulled up here. So you had mentioned earlier that Tyrion recalls a conversation in which Joffrey is talking to the Hound, right?
Yeah.
So that would be in a Game of Thrones. That would be in this first chapter, right?
Yep.
So
that's right before Tyrion slaps Joffrey.
Right. So right here, as Tyrion's coming out of that library, right, and he's been up all night. You know, the rising sun had not yet cleared the walls of Winterfell, but the men were already hard at it in the yard below. Sandor Clegane's raspy voice drifted up to him. "The boy is a long time dying. I wish he would be quicker about it." Tyrion glanced down and saw the Hound standing with young Joffrey as squires swarmed around them. "At least he dies quietly," the prince replied. "It's the wolf that makes the noise. I could scarce sleep last night." Let's see. So he casts a long shadow across the hard-packed earth, blah, blah, blah. And he says, "I could silence the creature if it please you." So this is the Hound talking.
Right.
He said through the open visor, his boy... placed a long sword in his hand. He tested the weight of it, slicing in the cold morning air behind him, you know, listening to the steel on steel. The notion seemed to delight the prince. "Send a dog to kill a dog," he exclaimed. "Winterfell is so infested with wolves, the Starks would never miss one." So is that what he's talking about, maybe overhearing? Just overhearing that conversation.
Right.
And it was a talk, they were talking about killing the wolf, right? The dire wolf, but maybe is he that's where I think that's a little unconvincing, right?
Because
as you read it, it doesn't seem like that they're talking about Bran,
right?
As because at least the boy dies quietly. Well,
Tyrion just kind of I know. He's just kind of putting together, thinking about it. Yeah,
right. That's where I go back to. You hear that? And people who think that Joffrey did this, you know, I get why, maybe because of Tyrion's thoughts later on and what was said here. Trying to put those, I just think it's a weak that particular part where you're going. The deeper question: who did actually do it?
Yeah,
is the question,
because we still don't really know. So here's I found the thing I was looking for. The question is: this is somebody on Reddit. The question is: who hired the cat's paw? The consensus answer is Joffrey, based on a Jaime point of view chapter in A Storm of Swords, where Cersei explains that Joffrey was trying to impress his dad, Robert, when Robert said that it would be a mercy if Bran had died instead of being crippled. There are several problems with that explanation. First, the last time Joffrey tried to impress Robert by slitting open a pregnant cat and showing it to him, Robert hit him so hard Joffrey was knocked unconscious and lost two of his baby teeth. Joffrey is unlikely to want to impress his dad again. Second, hiring a cat's paw who sets fire in Winterfell Library is a clever thing to do, and Joffrey is anything but clever. Third, no one knows that comatose Bran is crippled. That is revealed as he wakes up and the cat's paw is dead. No, that's not true. They should know he's crippled.
Yeah,
I see what he's saying.
Right.
The other possible suspects are Cersei herself, making sure Bran does not wake up and reveal what he saw, and deflecting the blame onto now dead Joffrey. That is probably the most likely. Then there is Mance Rayder, who tells Jon he was there, had a bag of silver, and would want to create chaos south of the wall by having a cat's paw use a Valyrian steel dagger from Robert's arsenal used against the Stark. It is possible we will never know, though, who actually did it.
Well, okay, here's something interesting. So, just off the wiki, in a Storm of Swords, Jaime later realizes that Joffrey sent the assassin in an attempt to impress his father, as you said, after overhearing a drunk Robert Baratheon say it would be kinder to put the crippled Bran out of his misery. So you're talking about that. So where did Jaime, I'm just going to go Storm of Swords here, chapter 72.
Yeah.
And I, thank goodness, have that book right here in front of me.
Okay, you want to pull that? You want to pull that up? While I'll pull up another kind of thought here. So this is from Reddit. The Song of Ice and Fire, Reddit. The scene in episode 4, this is season 7, episode 4, where Littlefinger gives Bran the Valyrian steel dagger is a major, you know, oh, moment in the series. For starter, Littlefinger realizes he is in completely over his head with these Stark children. Bran repeating his line, "Chaos is a ladder," definitely shocked Littlefinger and showed that Bran sees Littlefinger for who he is. The line stood out to me, though, is Bran asked Littlefinger if he knew who the dagger belonged to. I don't think he meant in recent history, as Littlefinger assumed in his evasive answer. I think Bran knows who the original owner of the dragon was, and he was, or the dagger, and he was asking more like a collector or historian would. All Valyrian steel is older than the Doom, and considering Bran knows all of history now, I think he was talking about a owner from much longer ago. Bran, as he now probably could care less about who the Catspaw killer was, you know, sent to kill him. It doesn't already know. I think he held the dagger and saw its history. I don't know if this will be important in the series, but I think it would be cool if it becomes the show version of Dark Sister or something, especially since Arya ends up carrying it. So then there's a bunch of stuff about the dagger I want to get into, and unless you have that part pulled up.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. About who sent the Catspaw, because I think that is one important question. But the other important question is actually about the dagger itself.
Okay.
Because as we've said, the dagger is the cover.
Yeah.
And the dagger still kind of makes circles. It's still a very important item. And Arya now has it, at least in the show. And so what is the importance of that? So, did some digging.
Okay.
In season 7, I think it's episode 1, Sam is at the Citadel. And he is flipping through an old book. And if you and people, thank you on like Imgur, have paused it and posted it, and you can actually kind of read and make out what it says. And so luckily people have pieced this all together, so you can actually kind of read it. Of course, some of it is difficult. As the first men established their realms following the path. Sorry, that's from World of Ice and Fire, but I'm gonna read it anyway because it's important. As the first men established their realms following the pact, little troubled them save their own feuds and wars, or so the histories tell us. It is also these histories that we learn of the Long Night, when a season of winter came that lasted a generation in which children were born, grew into adulthood, and many cases died without ever seeing the spring. Indeed, some of the old wives' tales say that they never even beheld the light of day, so complete was the winter that fell on the world. While this may well be no more than fancy, the fact that some cataclysm took place many thousands of years ago almost seems certain. So that's kind of the Long Night.
Okay.
That's happening. The Catspaw dagger pages here. Acolyte studies the so-called, and then you have to kind of piece it together here. Masteries of the arcane and magical. Test it to stand a solitary vigil, I guess, vaulted with 3 dragon glass. By this time, he had learned of the, it's kind of all over the place, but it's talking about magically lit candles. Their sorcerers do things across mountains, seas, and deserts. Men's dream and give to him. And then this person is pulling up some of this from a feast for crows.
Okay. Yeah.
I know that seemed like a big jumble mess, but it's all gonna make sense here in a second. So,
okay.
From A Feast for Crows, Samwell 5. What feeds a dragon's fire? Marwyn seated himself upon a stool. All Valyrian sorcery was rooted in blood or fire. The sorcerers of the Freehold could see across mountains, seas, and deserts with one of these glass candles. They could enter a man's dream and give him visions and speak to one another half a world apart, seated before their candles. Do you think that might be useful, Slayer? This person goes on to read. The Valyrians were familiar with dragonglass long before they came to Westeros. They called it Zidr Yaziril, which translates to frozen fire in Valyrian. And Eastern texts tell us of how the dragons would thaw the stone with dragon flame until it became molten and malleable. The Valyrians then used to build their strange monuments and buildings without seams and joints of modern castles where Aegon the Conqueror forged his 7 kingdoms. He and his descendants would often decorate their blades with dragonglass, feeling a kinship with the stone. The royal fashion for dragonglass ornamentation soon spread throughout the 7 kingdoms to those wealthy enough to afford it. Hilts and pommels were the most common decoration, for dragonglass is too brittle to make use as a crossguard. Whatever. So what this person is getting into is that dragon glass is really rare in Westeros. And this dagger is dragon bone, and you've got the Valyrian steel. So in itself, it's an even more kind of... It's not just a Valyrian steel sword where it just has, you know, the blade and whatever. Yeah. And that's what they're getting into. And
so are they saying that the dragon bone is more rare than like a dragon glass?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, and if you read the pages here, I was kind of reading from these pages too, and it's talking about when Aegon the Conqueror and his Seven Kingdoms.
Mm-hmm.
It's talking about dragon glass ornamentation throughout the Seven Kingdoms, the wealthy could afford it, and all this kind of stuff. Anyway, it's a super deep rabbit hole here, but it's kind of all over the place because you're piecing together like half pages and
right. So real quick again, in recap, the overall point is that it's just a rare dagger.
It's like super rare.
Super rare.
It's beyond just.
It's something actually more than like. I kind of understand where you're going with this is that someone possibly, if you go, because you mentioned Bloodraven already.
Yeah.
Who would have been a great way up in the Targaryen, whatever,
mm-hmm.
would be someone who would likely have had this before. And it's not like a recent thing that Littlefinger had made for himself or that mm-hmm. someone, you know, what it's an ancient blade sort mm-hmm. of thing. Is that?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, so, I mean, this Reddit thread is like crazy long. But what this guy ultimately ends up kind of arguing. This guy literally was been sitting there with like tinfoil as he was typing this.
That's
like,
awesome.
It's like, I mean, it's like, you know, when you walk, you know, when you see like, you know, people have got like the newspapers all on the wall and they got threads going everywhere. Like that's kind of what right. it is. But essentially what this guy ends up ultimately arguing is that this blade, you know, it's the cover of the first book and Arya now has it. So what is it? Is its point just that it is Valyrian steel? Or is it going to be the thing that kills the Night King?
Oh, you mean this dagger?
Like this dagger. Like maybe this specific dagger is the only thing that can kill it. Maybe not just Valyrian steel. Maybe not dragon glass. Like maybe only this dagger can kill him. Because remember, in the show, we see the Night King get pierced with mm-hmm. dragon glass.
Mm-hmm.
So.
What do you mean? Like the Night King himself?
Yeah, remember how they shove.
Oh, you mean like back in the day?
Yeah, back in the day, like when they kind of create him. Yeah. Gotcha.
Okay. So, I mean, okay. John is using a Valyrian in the show,
right?
A Valyrian steel sword, mm-hmm. and is able to kind of, you know, well, we even know in the books, like early on, you know, that regular steel sword held up for a little bit
mm-hmm.
against the others, and then it shattered. Right, mm-hmm. it shattered. So Valyrian steel seems like it's gonna hold up, right? It should hold up more, and it should be something that you could duel and battle with, as well as this dragon glass that's gonna be able to kill them, Sam mm-hmm. the Slayer, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we learn that he's able to take one of them down. But I guess, you know, getting back to this dagger being significant, I just kind of wonder, like, when it finally gets to King's Landing and they have a look at it,
mm-hmm.
it's almost like who's lying about its origins there? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You talk about Baelish and those who are around, knowing or not knowing who owned the dagger. Is it Tyrion? Is it Baelish? Is it, you know, and we've got some movie-isms in there or some show-isms, but I get that it had a previous owner before all of those people is the kind of the driving point.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, and if it were Bloodraven, I'm going to go with you on this tinfoil rabbit hole here.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You know, that it was sent to or whatever, I don't know, if this was his dagger at one point, right, that was like an ancient, very rare dagger blade, then
mm-hmm.
it would have to have been someone in the Targaryen family who was high up there or a legitimized bastard, and the only ones that we know of that could be left are someone like Bittersteel or... You know, Brendan Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bloodraven.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, maybe it may have also at one point been owned by Aegon Targaryen. Conqueror.
Yeah, the Conqueror. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's been passed down, and it's and it's this big. Yeah, it's this big deal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I kind of see that now. Oh, still, who sends it is that question? Who puts it in the hands of the cat's paw and try and goes forward with this assassination attempt? Because what I have here in a Storm of Swords, from what I've found. All right, I just kind of flipped to it and found a little something here. Let's see. There was a dagger. So Jaime is talking to Cersei, and they're kind of talking about just like she's almost like scolding him. If you just wouldn't have pushed that boy out the window, you know, this wouldn't have happened. All this stuff would have been whatever. So there was a dagger. The scars on Lady Catelyn's hands were real enough. She showed them to me. Did you? As in, like, did you do it, right? Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, don't be absurd. This is Cersei talking. Cersei closed the window, though, right? Yes, I hoped the boy would die. So did you. Even Robert thought that would have been for the best. We killed our horses when they break a leg and our dogs when they go blind, but we are too weak to give the same mercy to a crippled child, he told me. He was blind himself at the time from drink. So he was basically saying, you know, Robert was saying that they should just put him out of his misery type of thing, right? Robert, Jaime had guarded the king long enough to know that Robert Baratheon said things in his cups that he would have denied angrily the next day. Were you alone when Robert said this? You don't think he said it to Ned Stark, I hope. Of course we were alone. Us and the children. There you go. Mm-hmm. Cersei removed her hairnet. Let's see. Perhaps Myrcella sent this man with a dagger. Do you think so? She meant it to be kind of mockery, but she'd cut right to the heart of it. Jaime saw it at once. Not Myrcella. Joffrey. Cersei frowned. Joffrey had no love for Robb Stark, but the younger boy was nothing to him. He was only a child. A child hungry for a pat on the head from that sot you let him believe was his father. Mm-hmm. He had an uncomfortable thought. Tyrion almost died because of this bloody dagger. If he knew the whole thing was Joffrey's work, that might be why. I don't care why, Cersei said. He can take his reasons down to hell with him if you had seen how Joff died. So again, they're thinking that Tyrion is perhaps a part of the whole killing of Joffrey, and that maybe if Tyrion figured out that Joffrey is the whole reason why he was captured and whatnot and all these bad things have happened, that would be reason enough for him to want to, you know, kill his nephew. I don't think so, though.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, because once it all works out and it's this misunderstanding or whatever, you know, did Joffrey intend for Tyrion to get caught? You know what I mean? Type of thing. Is it actually Tyrion's dagger? You know, did we ever really establish that? So I don't know. There's just the line. They're still in a Storm of Swords working through this. Right. And Cersei's saying, no, it wasn't me. Because really, I think out the gate, you think, obviously, what was Jaime or Cersei? You know, one of them paid somebody and they went ahead and did this. Clearly not Tyrion, because he has a heart for cripples and things that are broken.
He had no reason to do
it. And then so Joffrey, Jaime gets right, you know, to the point is that he wanted a pat on the head, you know, from Robert Baratheon, who he believed was his, you know, father.
Yeah, but is Joffrey that dumb? Like, there's no, like, I cannot imagine that even Joffrey would honestly think. I mean, I could see him wanting to do it. Like, and I'm sure I could see him doing it in that, like, whatever. He doesn't care about him, whatever. But he would have to know that this is Ned Stark's son. Robert Baratheon would kill him. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he wouldn't kill him, but he'd beat the holy hell out of him.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Well, and if it was ever found out, Ned Stark would.
Right.
If you kill one of his sons, are you kidding me?
Absolutely.
I mean, like that is going to start a war right there. And that's essentially what it did.
Yeah. Because look what happens later when Joffrey is fighting with Arya and Sansa, and, you know, he doesn't take Joffrey's side.
Right,
the only reason he kind of does is because Cersei steps in. What are we going to do about your son's, you know, scars? And then he's like, well, okay, I guess.
Yeah.
Got to be fair here.
Yeah. Well, I think Robert kind of realizes that I don't think he's raised any of his kids. I don't think he's had any really involvement with them. And I do get that Joffrey would be seeking, you know, he would want his father to be proud of him if he's never had that. And his father's always drunk and just ridiculous, you know. Anyways, so, yeah, not real strong, but, I mean, it still could be somebody else. You know what I mean? That's just Jamie's thoughts on it, and he thinks that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. I have one last quick little rabbit hole here just about the dagger.
Okay, cool. That's
all right. Here. This is another Reddit thing here. In season 7, episode 4, a lot of emphasis was placed on the cat's paw dagger that almost killed Bran. Why is this dagger so important? As I was wondering about the significance of this crazy idea came to mind. Bear with me for a moment. Is this dagger Lightbringer? Now, of course, the prophecy speaks of a sword made of living fire, but prophecy should never be taken literally. The hilt is made of dragon bone, which could account for the fire aspect, and the hilt contains a ruby. Now, Melisandre's choker also has a ruby, and it seems that they are associated with the Lord of Light, ergo Lightbringer. Bran asks Littlefinger if he knows who the dagger belonged to. In A Storm of Swords, Tyrion says that Joffrey was behind the act of Bran, as we kind of just talked about that.
Yeah.
But where, if that's the case, then where, and it, Robert had it kind of with him or whatever, where did Robert get it from? Earlier this season, we saw the picture of a book about the Targaryens that Sam was reading. If the dagger was in the Targaryen family, I think it's a strong case, and I've seen this before in other things as well, that Robert got a dagger from Rhaegar when he kills him at the Trident. Rhaegar's breastplate was a three-headed dragon, done in rubies. Robert's hammer blow knocked the rubies from Rhaegar's chest, giving the ruby fort its name. So Rhaegar had a fondness for rubies, perhaps because he was aware of their deeper significance. We also know he was obsessed with the Azor Ahai prophecy. Did he suspect that the dagger was Lightbringer?
Okay, hold on. Can I real quick interject?
Yeah.
I think Robert Baratheon, I think he got the dagger from Peter Baelish, didn't he? Didn't he win it at the tourney on Prince Joffrey's name day?
No, Tyrion wins it.
Well, I'm just looking at the wiki. I know that in the show.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah.
You know, in the show, Tyrion wins it. But, like, in the book, the history of the Valyrian Steel dagger is that King Robert the First won the dagger from Lord Peter Baelish during the tourney on Prince Joffrey's name day.
Uh-huh.
So if you go back to that idea of Joffrey, could Joffrey have just taken this dagger off of his father and given it to somebody? You see what I'm saying?
Then how does Tyrion get it?
That was in the show. Is there more in the book? Because I'm just reading off of the.
I think that's in the book too, that's why Tyrion gets accused, because Lady Stark in the book as well says, no, this is your dagger.
Right. So okay. Peter Baelish, King Robert Baratheon won the dagger from Lord Peter Baelish during that tourney. Let's go on here a little bit further and see if there's anything else on here. Let's see. Believing that House Lannister is to blame, Catelyn and Sir Roderick traveled to King's Landing with the blood-stained knife to inform Eddard.
Oh, right? I got you. Because Tyrion does. Yeah, you're correct. Because yeah. Tyrion is like, that's not my dad.
Right.
Yeah, you're correct. Yeah, you're correct.
Well, let me just finish real quick. Lord Baelish explains that he had once owned the blade. Littlefinger states that he lost it to Tyrion Lannister during the tourney on Prince Joffrey's name day. He's lying, right. However, did when Sir Loras Tyrell defeated Tyrion's brother, Sir Jaime, in the list, Littlefinger advises Ned to get rid of the dagger since there is no way to prove it's Tyrion's. There's no way to prove it's Tyrion's, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Lord Stark keeps the blade when his wife departs the capital. So what happens to the blade actually after it moves on here?
Well, Catelyn has it because she... Well, Littlefinger... No, Littlefinger gets it back because Littlefinger uses it when he... that's the blade he uses when he attacks Ned Stark.
Oh, you mean in the show? Yeah, okay. Oh, does he have it in the book as well, though? Because you just kind of read through that part. Like, does he?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because what's tough is you go between show and
right. Yeah, yeah.
And book, and it depends on which one you're going to go. I always kind of with this stick to the books as much as possible. Yeah. Just for clarity, so because the Kingslayer actually later on in does recall that the dagger has changed hands over time, and Robert's displayed it. You know, when he's drunk and stuff at tourneys and feasts and things like that. So it's a solid dagger, and it's significant enough that Robert is displaying it, and things like that. So, let me see here. After.
Peter Baelish threatens Eddard Stark with the dagger, and this is from the Song of Ice and Fire wiki. So he must. Yeah, he advises Ned Stark to keep it, but I think Ned Stark must not take it, and so Littlefinger must have it, and then he uses it, so it must be in Littlefinger's possession, And so maybe in the books, it will be the same as in the show, where Littlefinger then gives it to Bran.
Okay.
And then Bran gives it to Arya.
Because Peter Baelish does have the dagger.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what this is. Okay.
Because Catelyn shows it to him. And he says, oh, this is...
And he wants to discard it, but at some point, Peter Baelish gets it back.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
I think it's that. I think he just keeps it then. I think she just gives it to him. And
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Oh, no. Yeah. Peter takes the dagger from Ned Stark when Lord Stark is taken captive in the throne room.
Interesting, because he doesn't want it to be called into question.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that is kind of close to the show. He just doesn't want it to be associated with him. He's told a lie to the Starks right there. He knows they're not privy to that information because they weren't maybe there at that tourney, and he blames it on Tyrion, saying that he's the one who lost it, but really he loses it to Robert Baratheon. It does kind of make sense that Joffrey would then take it off of his father.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And Jaime comes to that conclusion pretty quick. And Jaime's a smart guy. I mean, that's the other thing. I think... The more I was reading into this a little bit as you were kind of talking there, I just sort of there's more evidence here that Joffrey claims that he was no stranger to Valyrian steel, right? While he's destroying Tyrion's gift, and I was talking about with Widow's Wail when he first gets it, he says when he first gets Valyrian steel in his hand, when he says that when he says that at his
right,
you know, wedding, whatever, right, what have you, he says, "I am no stranger to Valyrian steel." Right, so there's something there that is kind of, yeah, and then Jaime, okay. So Jaime's kind of putting all of that together after Joffrey has died. Mm-hmm. That's why he decides, I think, to free Tyrion, because he thinks Tyrion has got that's sort of the breaking point, right? That's a big conversation between he and Cersei. He comes to this realization, and he thinks that he actually thinks that maybe Tyrion did kill Joffrey, but he did it because Joffrey has set off all these events. That got Tyrion in the situation in which he's in. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. But I think it is, you know, it's a significant dagger, right? But you know. And again, that's just Jaime. Maybe there is more to it. Because what's crazy is as these books go along, I think when you're first reading, like right now where we are in a Game of Thrones, if I were reading this the first time, I would say it's Cersei.
Yeah.
I would say Cersei paid somebody... To run that dagger in there, just like Catelyn Stark does, you know, and with the note, with it's like what you have, the information that you have in front of you, this is the conclusion that you make, you know. So I don't know.
Yeah. Wow. All right, guys, the rabbit holes. Well, we're gonna continue this rabbit hole just a slight bit here, because we do have a Raven, Sir Robert of Newcastle.
Nice.
Sent us here, and these are two kind of quicker questions. I was listening to the podcast when you were talking about Jaime possibly being Azor Ahai, and I was thinking who it could be. Then I thought, using the criteria of having to slay a lion and a sibling, that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it could be Arya, perhaps even by killing Sansa, who is technically a Lannister through her marriage to Tyrion, and also slaying her sister. But if this is true, could Lightbringer be Needle or the Dagger?
Wow. That's
part one. Yeah, so.
Okay, yeah. I mean, interesting.
The Dagger.
Right, he'd have to get it back. I think Jaime would have to get that back from... If Peter Baelish still has it.
He was saying... We were doing one talking about Jaime. He is saying, could it be Arya? Could Arya be Azor Ahai?
Right, but he's saying, you know... But if this is true, Lightbringer could be Needle or the Dagger.
Yeah.
But you'd have to plunge one of those two weapons into
Sansa's heart.
Sansa's heart, or he was talking about Jaime plunging that through his sister's heart.
Yeah.
Right, as well. So either one of those scenarios. So Needle would be in Arya's hand, and then how would Jaime would have to get the...
No, he said he was listening to the podcast where we were talking about it. He's specifically just asking about Arya.
Just Arya?
Yeah. Just Arya. Saying it could either be Needle or the Dagger.
Right. Okay. How did she get the Dagger, though?
Well, if you...
But off the show. Basically,
right.
The show.
We're on the show. Yeah.
Right. Okay. I get that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Peter Baelish has it. That's all I was saying. Right, is that like he has it. Even going back to what we said before, I'm saying Jaime would, now that we know we've established where the Dagger's at, Jaime would need to get that, you know. But what the scenario you and I were giving, I think, was... one in which we were using a different type of sword. We were using...
Right. Jaime could be using...
Widow's Wail or Oathkeeper.
Exactly, yeah.
Right. With this, it would be like that dagger coming into play. So, More so it would need to be, you know, it's fun to think that Needle could be Lightbringer. You know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Does it matter what the, like, the composition of the sword?
Don't know.
You know, like, is it more just the ceremony and the ritual in which you perform with the sword, and that then casts some magical power over the sword that you can use later on? You know what I'm saying? Because if that's the case, then it doesn't really matter.
Right.
It's just a matter. It's a sequence of events of plunging it into, you know,
right,
the heart of a lion.
Right.
You know,
salt and smoke, the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a good question.
And then
it's a good thought.
Yeah. Then also, I think you guys could do a podcast on Valyrian steel weapons and armor in the Seven Kingdoms.
Yeah.
Which brings me to my next question. If a Warhammer like Edric Storm in the books and Gendry in the show made of Valyrian steel, would it be as lethal as a sword? Now, there are, I don't have them off the top of my head, there are people who do have Valyrian steel, like, I think, like, an axe. Someone has, like, a Valyrian steel axe.
Okay.
And I think even somebody else has, like, a spearhead, I remember reading. Yeah, I think that, I believe that it is just as lethal.
Yeah.
Because ice doesn't seem any less lethal than Longclaw.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a different type of weapon.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I know this is nitpicking something, but, like, it's a Valyrian steel dagger, but yet it doesn't, like, easily, like Catelyn
right.
Stark is able to hold it off with her hands.
Well, it says the cut goes deep.
Deep to the bone, and it right. was the bone which stopped it. And maybe this guy was just kind of weak and, you know,
right.
feeble and didn't expect to meet any resistance at mm-hmm. all, I think is the explanation for it, but...
And he's
you know,
freaking out too, because he's like, "Well, no one is supposed to be here."
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I don't
so
think
he's
he wants to
panicking.
Kill her. Yeah.
Right. So, I don't know, but I just thought that was interesting. I'm like, man, if it's such a badass blade, like, why the hell did it not just slice right through? I mean, it's, you know, I just was wondering myself, how sharp is Valyrian steel, and why mm-hmm. is it so much better? Mm-hmm. You know, should be a I don't know, but yeah, it's a good question.
Yeah, like a
how
Warhammer,
much better?
I don't know if a Warhammer. I think for a Warhammer, I don't because it's not sharp. I think it would just be durable. I don't,
yeah.
you know, and it's going to be a stronger density. I am not a chemist.
I would say that.
So,
right?
Yeah.
They talk about how it's folded over and the yeah. different ways in which they work it. And I think, that it would be something that would be more durable, like you said.
Right. Although it's supposed to be really light. So in terms of.
Yeah. Well, geez.
If it's really light and really strong, I guess, you know, I don't know. I guess like if you were to think today, like what, you know. What would it be like having a titanium hammer as opposed to like an iron or a steel hammer?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I guess. Like, and what that.
I mean, yeah, if you can get more force on your swing because it weighs less, but it's going to penetrate armor better than
I would
steel
than
I would imagine it would be.
Than I would imagine. Yeah, I would imagine.
Better. But yeah, you've been looking into more of those, the weapons and
right.
things. So yeah, it's definitely something we can work
we'll
up.
We'll definitely have to do a podcast at some point just on. All the Valyrian weapons, where they are, what we know about them.
Right.
What some of the theories are.
Yeah. So, okay. So yeah, again, so that's our Raven for the week. We have a few more we're saving for, Follow-Up Friday, and we only got a couple of those right now. So please send us a Raven about, you know, the rabbit hole today. And if you have any questions about Jaehaerys the First, which again was, I apologize for it being kind of confusing, but I just, you know, wanted to kind of lay out the succession there, but we're going to go over all that again. So send us a Raven at btkcast@gmail.com, and you know, as Sir Matt said, we will work on the Green Dream episode this week, kind of a theory thing,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll get back to Follow-Up Friday the following week. We'll still be posted on Friday though.
Green
Dream. So okay, we are on to Man the Wall. This is our Patreon plug here. Basically, if you want to support the show, you can head on over to patreon.com/bendtheknee. The link is down in the description. This really helps Sir Matt and I out a lot. Honestly, we're able to upgrade the equipment, do different things, and it kind of creates the community, right? It gives us more mm-hmm. pieces to talk about. I'm working on the painted table now, friends.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about the painted table for a second because it's a big deal. Okay. It struck me when I was looking at the lore video that the Targaryens flew over Westeros, right? And they came back to Dragonstone and they decide to hire these different people, right? To make a map, to plan this out, to how are we going to conquer Westeros?
Mm-hmm.
And anyways, it just was super cool to me. I've never really given it a whole lot of thought. But I want something like that here, and I want to put the pieces out there.
Yep.
I want to see where Lady Lauren and Lord Adam Parker and everybody, where they're at in the kingdom and what's going on. You know, I got to keep track of this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, okay, we have a knighting ceremony though, because one of the tiers in there, we have knighting ceremonies. We've got hedge knights. We've got take the black. Lots of different perks and rewards in there. So, here we go. Lady Kelsey, in the name of the warrior, I charge you to be brave. In the name of the father, I charge you to be just. In the name of the mother, I charge you to defend the young and innocent. In the name of the maid, I charge you to protect all women. In the name of the smith, I charge you to mend the broken. In the name of the crone, I charge you to seek wisdom. In the name of the stranger, I charge you to face death with sword in hand. Rise, Lady Kelsey of Lethbridge. Oh, man. Mm-hmm. You guys wouldn't understand, like, what I'm saying, that just actually just saying it. Oh, and, you know, and I don't know. So thank you, Lady Kelsey. We are so glad to kind of have you along. Again, that's our knighting ceremony. A couple different options. There's different ways to do it. So you can hit us up on Patreon and we can talk about those. Get your custom sigil and man the wall, guys. Mm-hmm. You know, take the black, man the wall, and we'll go from there. So what else do we have in man the wall? Just Black Council, Green Dream episodes.
Yeah, Black Council, Green Dreams coming up. We still doing some meat and cheese episodes. Mm-hmm. Those all be available on our Patreon thing. We're doing book to show comparisons. So yeah,
it's a fun time, guys. You should definitely go check it out. All right, man. This was a little longer than I thought it was going to be. But it's
a
great.
Little longer. We kind of went down some rabbit holes. Sometimes we just see where they take us.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know.
Well, my big thing, too, is I've always said it's a discussion, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And it's one of those things, like, you guys get to kind of see. We have these discussions all the time, and then sometimes they happen, like, live on the podcast. Because you read something. We've read the chapter so many different times. And, like, one line sticks out about Hodor, and I wanted to go down a rabbit hole right then.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to save it.
Yeah,
we're going to come back to it.
Yeah, no, that's fine. And, you know, the other things, too, is there is so much material sometimes in this where you kind of have to pull from a lot of different places.
Yeah.
You know, we have the books, which is, like, the sacred text.
Yeah.
And then you have... Except for the fact that the books are point of view. So sometimes just in the books, you have information. All right, I got to pull this and pull this and kind of piece it together and see what I think.
Yes.
Then we have A World of Ice and Fire, which, again, is definitely a point of view, but more context. And then we have the other aspect, which is the show, which is, I guess, a guide for where we think things are going to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we can't take it as it is sacred.
Yeah.
And does it provide honest answers to some of these theories?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff we know that the show doesn't cover, like Lady Stoneheart and stuff like that. And so it's like, okay, we have to wait for the books.
Right.
But then there's, like, bigger picture stuff, which is like, well, can that answer some of these questions? And
yeah. Yeah. You know, okay. I mean, that's a really good point. And so one thing I like to throw out to different listeners, you know, maybe I'll put a poll up for, you know, on our Facebook page. So check our Facebook page if you want to hop in on this poll. I'll do it right after this. I think, you know, you are now, like, plowing through the series, right? I've read it several times, and I think I've never read it the way in which you just follow a character's point of view.
Yeah.
I've never done that. And, like, it is becoming more and more interesting to me because of, you said this to me a couple weeks ago, point of view is everything. You're realizing that. And I'm like, wow, I forgot that. Because just like you said there, you know, what Jamie says could be contradicted by another point of view over here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting to just kind of follow those train of thoughts. So my poll is, which character should I follow? Yep. Which one do you start? I think there might be a guide out there. I've never really looked into it.
Well,
but
there is, actually. If you go to the the Song of Ice and Fire wiki, they have chapter summaries.
Yep.
And if you just click on, say you click on, go to Game of Thrones and click on one of the characters, just, you know, start with their point of view number one, it will then actually, it shows you, it says, like, okay, so this is the chapter that comes before it, and this is the chapter that comes next. And then there's an above and below, and
right,
that's like John 1, John 2, John 3, John 4.
Right. My question is, exactly. Which one
should you start with?
Yeah.
I think you just got to start with whoever it is that you you want.
Really. I know. See, what I'm interested in is I think I might leave this up to the listeners.
The listeners, yeah.
Because, I mean, honestly, guide me the right direction. I've read this before, and I'm now...
Yeah. And then...
This summer, I have a chance to really plow... Give me a week. I'll plow through a whole freaking...
And then think of this. Point then of view. Then there's another way to read it, which is a storm or a feast of crows and a dance with dragons at the same time.
Right, yeah.
That's another thing. That's another way people can do it.
Right, right.
There's so much... Then, of course, there's Duncan Egg and Sons of the Dragon and all this other stuff. Yeah. And, you know, there's so much.
Right, yeah. So it's great. It's a great problem.
There's so much content to unpack, but it's not too big to where it seems overwhelming. It's just...
Right. Yeah, I know. I know.
So, always going to be piecing it together. Always going to be looking at new things. Just wait till Fire and Blood comes out.
Good Lord.
And then...
I know. You know, hey, another thing, too, and I mentioned this in a previous episode, but now that I'm on summer break here, I have a chance to kind of go through and create that doc. I was talking about a Prezi or something else, and taking a character in the main series and seeing which other characters are surrounded by that character at which time. And I'm going to continue to kind of work on that because I started that today. Like with the World of Ice and Fire histories, I like took, you know, Jaehaerys, and I was trying to piece together who was alive when and when did they die and all this kind of stuff. The wiki does that, but it's on different pages, and you kind of got to put it all together. Mm-hmm. And we're reading it in World of Ice and Fire, which does a nice job, but sometimes you need your own, you know, thought process behind it. So I'm going to make like a concept web to kind of piece it all together. So I'll share that on Patreon as well. And you guys can honestly see me working on it. I'll open up to where you can make comments. You can comment on the web and kind of see if we're going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So, all right, guys. I think it's time to say our farewell.
All right. We want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing Chapter 15, Sansa 1.
If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, or leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We'll see you in a week, and remember, winter is coming.